Please help support the FitCast going forward, making sure that new episodes are coming to you every single week by going to patreon.com/thefitcast. That's patreon.com/thefitcast. And you can support the show starting at just $1 per episode. And everyone that is supporting the show through Patreon is also getting the episode 7 days early and without any pre-roll stuff like this that you're hearing right now. You can also go to thefitcast.com and click on the PayPal tab on the left-hand side and do the same thing. But again, going forward, these episodes are going to get done based on the support of the audience. So thank you so much to everyone out there that is supporting the show, and I hope you support it going forward. Hello, welcome back to the FitCast. This is episode number 315. I am Kevin Larrabee, and I'm very happy to have on the show for the very first time, Joy Victoria. Joy, how you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Doing great. We've been kind of going back and forth on connecting to do this stuff. We finally were able to get together thanks to the magic of Skype, and we're going to be talking about a lot of cool stuff from things the audience sent in and some other cool stuff that you're doing on your end. So for people who don't know you or don't know about you, I've been following your stuff for a while now, but you know, for other people out there, I know you have the website fitnessbaddies.com and what you have going on over there at the blog, but I'm just kind of like curious, and I'm sure the audience is, like, how did you get into this whole, you know, fitness industry thing? How did you get interested in fitness, and how did you get to where you are today?
Okay, well, it started off when I was little. I started just working out on my own when I was a teenager, and I tried to play a lot of sports. I got injured repeatedly, and that kind of just led to, I had, you know, a personal interest in staying healthy and being fit and all that stuff. So I've done just about everything under the sun in regards to, you know, workout videos and being a cardio bunny and spin classes, and eventually, I got injured just over and over repeatedly and made my way to strength training. And yeah, I was really just doing it as a hobby, a personal interest. That's how I got my first certification as well. And then when the time came to kind of pick between careers, it was either, you know, go into fitness full time or go into law enforcement. And I picked fitness, and I was very lucky that I got a job as a strength coach at a high school in Vermont for 2 years, which gave me a lot of hands-on experience. That's really where I started delving more into, you know, all the textbooks, the books, the blogs, and really trying to, you know, up my knowledge level. And then from there, it kind of just snowballed, and I moved to Toronto, where I'm based now. I'm based out of Bang Fitness in Toronto, and I moved here last year. And yeah, that's where I am now. So that's kind of how I got here. I don't have a formal degree. I did about a year and a half of exercise science. And I've kept learning along the way. I started my blog kind of as a personal journal to, mm-hmm. you know, catalog my training, my experiences, what I was reading and learning at the time. And then eventually branched out into online training and seminars, and yeah, so.
Do you have any, like, I know we're always having people that are listening to the show that, I mean, I can't tell you how many people that have come up to me at Performator seminars and things like that are just, you know, interested in getting into the industry. So I was wondering, do you have any advice for those people, you know, in today's age of, you know, the best steps to take to, you know, whether it's getting noticed or, you know, just getting your name out there in the industry?
Well, I would say, first off, make a decision that this is what you want to do, and then, you know, put yourself out there. Really open yourself up to learning, try to get in contact with as many people as that are doing what you want to do, and find ways to read them, talk to them, and be around them. And I try to go to seminars a lot, and I travel, I buy a lot of books, all that kind of stuff. But I also just, you know, you need to put yourself in an environment to use what you're learning. Mm-hmm. So sometimes people get into personal training kind of, you know, they start part-time before it becomes full-time. They're not really sure if they want to go, you know, which route they want to take, either whether they're in school or not in school. So, but either way, find an environment where you can start doing what it is that you want to do. So, yeah, in that sense, be open to the opportunities and put yourself out there. So that would be my main advice.
who were your mentors? Who did you look up to when it came to getting into the industry? Or did you just, like, like you said, you got certified and then you just started reading as much as you possibly could and started going to the seminars.
Well, my first mentors were the people I read online. I was in Vermont, so this was kind of in the middle of nowhere. I was in a small town and there, you know, it wasn't like, didn't have a fitness industry or anything like mm-hmm. that. So really I started reading Alan Aragon's blog. I started reading Martin Birkin's blog. This was on the nutrition end. Mm-hmm. And then my initial mentors for training and everything were textbooks.
Yeah.
I got, you know, Beyond Brawn, Starting Strength, Practical Programming,
the classics.
The classics. And honestly, it was just stuff I'd heard about. I looked it up on Amazon and ordered them. So, it wasn't rocket science, and I clearly didn't know a whole lot about training then, but I knew enough to be safe. And then I had lots of high schoolers to try stuff out on.
Exactly. No, that's that's not a bad thing at all. You got to have a nice, good, you know, test pool to try things out on. And high schoolers, that age group, they're able to recover nice and fast. So usually able to try out a ton of different stuff on them. That's awesome. So, you know, just to kind of go off of, you know, what I was talking about before, we did get some questions from the audience. And, you know, to be honest, whenever I get new guests on, especially people like we've never met, so I don't know, you know, too much about you. We haven't hung out and like met up at seminars and stuff like that. But I'm always curious to see like what, you know, what's interesting to people out there in the industry, because I'm really in a bubble at MBSC for the most part. But I'm just kind of curious, you know, when you got some spare time and you're doing some extra reading and doing some research, like, what do you like to read about? I know we were kind of going back and forth in email before, and you were talking a little bit about, you know, interesting stuff with motor learning. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, for sure. So this is just kind of where my brain is at right now. And I've been really delving into it more because I do believe that movement, good movement and how to get it and what it looks like, what it means is the basis for building, you know, every physical quality that we want, you know, strength, speed, helping with fat loss, right? That's really what the point of exercise is. So I was lucky when I came here to Bang Fitness, the owner, Jeff Gervitz, and other coaches here, they really run a very well, the way they run the gym is excellent. Everyone gets their own programming. You know, it's mastery of the basics is one of their principles. And my eyes were open because this is kind of stuff I'd been hearing about and trying to learn about, but it's different when you actually go in and you see someone putting it into action in their program with all their clients, both, you know, athletes and general population clients. And then, yeah, I just, I just delved more into it, and it's cool because this is where, and I know this is one of the questions someone on Facebook asked, this is where you have people, the reason people crawl and regress movements to the floor, tall kneeling, half kneeling. Gray Cook talks a lot about this. This is where a lot of his, it has the same principles, right? Todd Hargrove, I just got his book called Guide to Better Movement, which is an excellent book as well. So basically it's this idea that as humans, you know, we're meant to move. This is what our bodies are for. And there's ways to teach movement and teach exercise, even when someone has maybe a lot of issues or in this day and age, our bodies aren't used to moving as before, that, you know, we're trying to regain that and get back to the ease that we did that with children. And so it's not just, you know, putting someone in a squat and trying to teach them how to squat, but it's thinking, okay, so how does the brain learn how to squat, right? I mean, babies learn how to squat without us having to teach them, right? There's a development stage that goes on where our brain learns that and we create the maps for it. And it's all still there in our bodies, no matter how old we are or how sedentary we've been or how weak we've been. So this is, you know, the idea of motor learning and learning more about that and how your brain learns movement and different, it's tied into cueing. It's tied into, you know, setting up exercises or getting creative with exercises, because it's all about, we're trying to accomplish a certain physical task, mm-hmm. right? That's really the goal of any exercise, no matter what it is. We're trying to accomplish a task. How do we teach that task? How do we teach it so that it will transfer over into sport? How do we teach it so that we can do it unconsciously and it will improve something else? And to answer Michelle's question on Facebook, that's where crawling and regressing movements come from. And one of the easiest ways to think about it is regressing movement means, you know, bringing it closer to the floor. And then reverse it, you know, progressing will mean bring it up from the floor. So you can just imagine, what does a baby do first before it walks, and then it runs and it squats and it stands, right? So all of these movements can be used in regular exercise for regular people to kind of get back that physical literacy, that ease of movement that will actually transfer when you have them go from tall kneeling to half kneeling to standing to squatting. Which is often much more effective because it taps into how the brain learns movement to begin with. And all of that stuff is still stored there in our heads, right? I mean, that's what our brain is for. Muscles are just take commands, right? They're not intelligent on their own. We need our brains to send the right signals. So yeah, that's, you know, I hope that answers her question, but that's really what it's about.
Yeah, totally. Have you, like, For me personally, like, some of the more interesting stuff that we've seen at NBSC when we have in services come in has been, you know, that motor learning stuff, like being able to, like, people out there, you know, new trainers and things like that, they always kind of look at the finish. They don't look at, like, what you really need to people to do to get them into a proper squat pattern. They just think, you know, maybe my only regression is going to be putting a band underneath their knees so we get extra glute activation and they're able to stabilize a little bit better. But I'm curious, have you checked out any of, like Joe Sansalone has come in a couple times and he's talked about what they're doing at Original Strength. I don't know. It's kind of similar to sounds like what you're talking about.
Yes, it's very similar. Yes, I do know some of the stuff they're doing over there. And you can kind of see this same basic principle in a lot of the top names also in physical therapy. It's that concept. It's that, you know, if we want the body to be able to get to point B, right, we just have to move back far enough to find the easiest way to get it to do that and then progress from there. This is really where regressing and progressing exercises, it simplifies the whole idea, right? I mean, there's a million different ways you can regress an exercise, you can progress an exercise, right? But at least for me, it was extremely helpful as a trainer. And of course, I first heard about this with movement and Gray Cook and FMS and stuff. There's just a lot of stuff out there that makes it so much easier for a trainer to look at a client and be like, okay, so this isn't working, right? They're struggling. They obviously are not ready for this exercise. How can I make it easier for them? Because the goal of exercises, right, is improve your movement, improve your athleticism, improve your strength. But your body can't be forced into it, right? We have to work with where they are or where they're coming from. So,
yeah, I really recommend if people out there haven't checked out any of that stuff, like, you know, just crawling pattern stuff, or, you know, if I know Joe has some videos up of what they've been doing with Original Strength, but it looks easy, but then you get on the ground and you start trying to do this crawling pattern stuff correctly, and it is very challenging and fantastic for warming up before you go and train. So
it's really great. And depending on the client, sometimes that is their strength exercise.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, more even keeping the basic movement patterns, I guess you can say, like, well-oiled or well-greased. Yeah, for warm-ups, it's amazing. And it's simple in concept, which is the nice thing, right?
Absolutely. So let's kind of, like, go on the other end of the spectrum and talk a little bit about nutrition and diet and stuff like that, because this is – we're getting to that period. Like, we're recording this 2 weeks before Thanksgiving, and it's about to hit the fan, at least here in the United States. I know you're from the States, but you're up in Canada. Thanksgiving there is a little bit different, but I'm guessing, you know, you might still be celebrating some kind of American Thanksgiving. But I got to ask you, you know – This is a hard part for people, is just figuring out what to do when it comes to the nutrition and, you know, trying to ingrain those habits. So I was wondering if you could talk about, you know, what do you do with your clients and your, you know, athletes to try to get them to do what they need to do nutritionally?
Okay. Well, I love Thanksgiving. I love all holidays. One thing I do like about Canadian Thanksgiving is that we get like 2 months before Christmas hits.
Oh, that's right.
American Thanksgiving is like you only have a month and then you're doing it all over again. I don't think Thanksgiving or any holiday is going to make or break your diet. So just to address that side of it, you know, I tell my clients holidays are for fun. They're for enjoyment. And I never really focus on, you know, holiday strategies, so to speak. I think that's kind of it kind of reduces it down to something that can cause a lot of stress. But if a client is coaching with me for diet overall, one of my biggest, I guess you could say my biggest principles for nutrition coaching is that your diet is not your life. So your diet needs to fit your life, not the other way around, right? And in your life, you're going to have parties. You're going to have, you know, you're going to have your schedule that's variable. You're going to travel. You're going to have social occasions. So we need to take all of that into account so we can set up a diet that is actually going to suit you and that you can stick to and that doesn't require you to significantly, you know, take away certain social support or anything that would disrupt your, you know, your enjoyment. Your diet should be kind of eventually become almost like an afterthought, right? Where you implement enough good habits that you don't have to be spending so much time thinking and obsessing and tracking and all that stuff. So that's the end goal. But when I start clients off, you know, one of the biggest things is awareness, right? I need to know where they are and I need to know in detail. And then I need to know a lot about their history and where they're coming from. Because if we don't have a clear picture of where they're starting from, then all my recommendations are kind of going to be a big guess, right? And I like to make my guesses as well informed as possible. So, you know, we never really know if something works until you implement it and use it for a little while. But that all comes from evaluating, you know, their past dieting history. I can say, you know, most of my diet clients come from diet backgrounds. Basically, they've been dieting for many years or they've tried, you know, a variety of diets that have had negative impacts on their body, both physically and psychologically. I get a lot of, CrossFit competitors and powerlifters. So they also have considerations for weight cuts often. And, you know, they want to stay near a certain body weight. And then also, you know, there's diets out there where, you know, maybe you've tried to reduce carbs for years and that can have, you know, some long-term negative impacts. Again, this is context dependent on the individual. Mm-hmm. So basically it's just like, I want to know, I have a really good picture about where they are. And that's often hard because, you know, it means being honest with yourself. It means being honest with your history. So my job as a coach is to find the best questions that will get the answers that I want from them. Because people aren't always the best judge of what's going on in their own life, right?
Totally, totally.
And when it comes to diet, my job is just, okay, I need to know exactly what's going on, but kind of, you know, filter out the subjectivity that I get, right? So sometimes, you know, I'll find out a couple months in that, you know, for instance, a female client will say, well, I just got my monthly back. And I'm like, well, you mean it was gone? You know what I mean? Or how long has it been gone? That kind of stuff. And it's very important because it gives me like, you know, I need a snapshot of the state of their body is in, right? And this has so many variables, sleep, relationships, you know, body image, all that stuff affects the body in general. So when we're talking about nutrition coaching and fat loss, it's more than just, okay, here are your macros and follow this, follow that. It really actually is pretty difficult. I found it difficult as a coach because it's much more about your behavior. It's much more about your, you know, how you balance out your life. And it's not, some people you can just hand them some macros, you know, and they're good to go, but that's not the majority of clients, right? I'm working through the precision nutrition coaching program right now. Mm-hmm. And I do use macros and calories with my clients and everything, but I also really am trying to delve more into the habit-based and how to get compliance and get adherence, and because that's what matters at the end of the day, right?
Totally, so, yeah. That's a fantastic program. That's on my first thing to do once they open up the spring 2015. I had some travel going on for the end of 2014, so I missed out on the last one, but for the next one, the stuff that they've been doing in terms of putting together a fantastic program at PN has just been amazing. It's just really great stuff. What have you thought about it so far since you've been going through it? How long have you been studying for it?
I've only been studying it for about a month and a half now, so I'm only on the third chapter. I'm still going through the science. I'm literally reading it from front to back. So
yeah, of course.
And it's good. It's awesome. You know, I appreciate the thoroughness of their education, especially since I didn't complete my degree. So sometimes when you're being taught, you know, the basics of the anatomy and the physiology and stuff, I feel that's very important for trainers to know. And you don't necessarily have to go to college to do it or have a class to do it, but it is helpful. And it is, they put together a very good comprehensive program, which I'm hoping to finish by my birthday next year. That's my deadline. That's in March.
When's your birthday? Or March.
In March.
All right.
So, you know, it's home study. It's home study. So, yeah. You know, you have to keep up with it. And there's nobody, you know, breathing down your back telling you homework's due.
You don't have like a study partner or something like that to make sure you get, you know, chapter 4 done by the end of next week or anything like that?
Well, one of the other coaches here is doing it as well. We've talked about that. We just haven't managed to sync up our schedules.
Yeah, that's why I'm trying to do that with someone at MBSC. That's my goal because I'm terrible about that stuff. I was always the last minute kind of guy in college. But so let's talk about not really restriction, and I don't want to call like dieting restriction, but we did get some questions on Twitter, you know, from women out there who are like, all right, I'm good where I'm at in terms of body fat percentage. But, you know, I'm at this point where I want to put on some more muscle. And even like, I don't even know if the term bulking is the best term for it, but, you know, what do you recommend or what kind of advice do you give to women out there specifically who are like, yeah, you know, I'm ready to go from doing, you know, 3 chin-ups to sets of 8. And, you know, I want to put on, you know, 4, 5, 6 pounds of muscle.
Okay. Well, they will have to eat more. Yeah. So with women, we have to work a little bit harder at it, right? We don't have, you know, all the hormones working as much in our favor as guys do. So the biggest thing, aside from the programming, which, you know, will play a big role, you're just going to have to eat more. And one of the easiest ways to do it is, you know, start with a low percentage of numbers. 10%, increase your calories by 10%. Now, if you don't track your calories or macros or anything, it's a little bit hard to be as precise, right? But depending on how someone, you know, keeps an eye on their diet, even if it's loosely, I would say, you know, you can start with having an extra serving of protein every day, right? Having an extra serving of carbs. When I was really trying to, I guess you can say I was trying to bulk, I was training for my powerlifting. I tracked my macros and I had to get in, you know, up to 3,000 calories a day when I was training hard. Any less than that, and I would not be able to complete my training. So when they're you know, your training should be designed so that you can make muscular increases, but then you need to add the food. And one of the biggest obstacles I find with women and women clients in general, and this is just from a lot of my, you know, discussing this in threads, my own clients and others, you kind of have to get over that feeling of being a little bit heavier and puffier for a while, because you're going to eat more food, you're going to hold more water, and it's going to kind of feel like a fat day.
That's a huge point. I don't think you should gloss over that so quickly, because it's not just – it's for anyone that is trying to, you know, bulk. Like, you have to realize, you know what? That bulking is – or putting – when you're putting on muscle, like, you're going to be eating more and you're going to have some side effects with that.
Yeah, and then this is not the same as eating more and – ending up with a lot of fat gain. It's not the same thing, right? Because people kind of take it to either extreme. They just never can eat enough to make any progress, or they go the other end and eat as much as they want, and then they end up with, you know, 20 extra pounds of fat and 5 pounds of muscle, right? Well, that's kind of a waste, because then you got to take all the fat off again. But for women, I feel, because this is, you know, this is just from a girl's perspective, but, you know, you have your fat days and your thin days, basically days where you feel more lean and tight and days where you feel like more bloated, right? And this also is tied into our monthly cycles and all that kind of stuff. But I find a lot of women really fear feeling that way, even though they don't even look that different. So if you really want to gain some muscle, you got to kind of get over that fear, because just by virtue of eating more food, you're going to weigh more. Right? It won't be super significant, but your weight will fluctuate anywhere from, you know, I'm going to say under 10 pounds, but it really just depends on the person and it depends on what their diet looks like. But when I was, you know, when I was really trying to eat more to up my training, I fluctuated between 129 and 138. And at the end, my baseline rate was the same. My baseline weight was the same. I was still 131, 132. That's the weight I've been for a long time. And then you need to find a way to keep yourself accountable so you actually know that you're eating more. And that is really where there's so many different ways to go about this. Tracking your macros is one way. And really, I like it just because it's simple and it's precise, but not everybody is going to do that. And I don't, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But you have to be honest with yourself, because if you want to eat, if you want to gain some muscle, you got to know that you're eating enough to support it, right? And then measurements and pictures are a good way to track too, and how your clothes fit, and then just keep at it. You know, it's not, I would say women can honestly, you don't necessarily have to go through these cut and bulk cycles. You know what I mean? It can be more, imagine it kind of as a trend that you shift one way or the other, mm-hmm. especially when you don't already have a good muscular base. These very strictly determined cut and bulk cycles that maybe you'll see some bodybuilders or more advanced physique competitors doing are not appropriate for the average person that just wants to get stronger. It's going to take quite a significant amount of time, but you can just keep going with it, and you can always shift the trend a little bit one way or the other, right?
Totally, yeah. So,
yeah, that's what I would say. But yeah, and if you keep track of your weight, if you keep track of measurements somehow, your body's not just going to, you know, put on 20 pounds overnight. Mm-hmm. It's kind of when people get lazy about checking in with themselves or being honest, right? That suddenly, you know, well, I tried to bulk and I ended up, you know, super, super heavy and big. Mm-hmm. So I would say you just need to know how you're going to measure it, right? Have a loose plan set up and then, you know, go with it.
Let's talk a little bit about training for a second, because, you know, when I was doing my extensive research for the show, up on your website, you had a blog post a couple months back about, like, really just going step by step and doing a huge summary of your training from last year, from 2013. Man, I can't believe it's almost 2015. But
I know, right?
Jeez.
I didn't even get it. I meant to do that on New Year's of 2014. It ended up halfway through.
That's what happens. And it's a long blog post. And I was wondering if you could just talk, you know, a little bit about that, because you get a couple years into doing extensive training, you're kind of at diminishing returns. So I was just wondering, like, that's a big deal to take a step back and look at, like, your previous years of training to see what worked, see what didn't work, and to take the time to catalog all that stuff. I was just wondering, you know, for the audience out there, like, A, you know, how do you recommend going about doing that? If people are listening and saying, like, yeah, maybe it's getting close to the end of 2014, maybe I should be looking back and see what works and what didn't before I go into next year. And also, what did you learn from it? What did you learn from your year of training?
Oh, wow. What did I learn? Gosh, I learned so much. Okay. So, so the looking back is kind of like debriefing yourself, right? And some of the coaches that I follow that I'd really respect, that are top level coaches, are be like, well, you always need to be asking questions, right? Because you're never going to find out what it is that works for you unless, you know, you look back and evaluate somehow, right? And this, you don't need a coach to do this for. You don't need a trainer. This is something that can, you know, it's just, you can do personally. Say, okay, well, you know, what did I feel? Did I get something from it? How did it work? And it, you know, it's good to do regularly. It's good to do no matter, you know, what your exercise or what your program. So yeah, gosh, 2013 and 2014, this year as well, have been, you know, really, I've learned just so much. It's almost like, you know, as years go by, I kind of double and then triple the rate at which I learn as well. And I think it was Matt Perriman that said, and I think I quoted this in the blog, that you can't really appreciate what having years of training experience behind you can do for you. Just so many, I can look back now and see so many things I didn't see before. And that not only benefits me now and my clients, but I see how the pieces fit together and where, you know, I was like, oh, you know, maybe I look back and be like, I was assuming this about something and that assumption was wrong, which is why I got that result. And so I look at training as like a big experiment. So, you know, I don't think exercise or training can ever get boring, because there's so much you can try and there's so much you can do. So really, you know, I didn't always pick my programs with maybe, you know, I didn't pick the perfect program for me or stuff like that. But one thing I've always done is I was always willing to try and go through a lot of these programs and just see what I got from it. And also, you know, on a personal note, it's kind of, there's certain things I know about my body, my injury history, what I would like to do, that I'm always, my brain is always searching out the pieces of information I don't know. So a lot of my programs, what I got out of it was just, you know, another piece of the puzzle, like, oh, okay, so that's what I was assuming wrong, or this, oh, now I feel this, or, you know, that's kind of how I see it in my mind. I visualize like a puzzle and I'm just adding pieces to it. Mm-hmm. Right. So my, you know, I've been strong in different ways. You know, I did a lot of barbell lifting, but I ended up with quite a bit of pain and some, you know, imbalances and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of directed me towards another vein. And I learned so much about breathing and posture and stuff that I didn't even factor into my equation. You know what I mean?
Totally, totally, yeah.
And then that led me down other roads, and then that led me down other roads. So that's kind of how I guide my training and how, you know, it leads me to picking the next thing that I want. So I kind of, it's, you know, stay curious about yourself, and you can always get something out of every program you do and every day that you train. So I went back to, you know, my faithful little notebook where I write my training sessions, and I start just, you know, writing down thoughts. If I can leave a training session having felt or discovered just one thing different or new, you know, then that's successful to me. So, and I think that's where you get kind of in this flow state with your own exercise and your own body. And it makes it really fun. It makes it enjoyable. It's like, it's practice, you know, it's a time where you're learning about yourself rather than just trying to force a result from the exercise, right? Totally. Results matter, right? But there's a learning curve. There's a learning curve, and coaches and trainers and training partners can speed that up. But especially for people that are on their own and trying to figure this out on their own and are, you know, are listening to a podcast like this, you know, I encourage them to, you know, just try, do, think, ask questions. Because, you know, it's not like you can just show up and do an exercise and be like, okay, so now where's my result? Right?
No, exactly.
Yeah, because results come from the process. So you will have to pay attention to the process. And that's really kind of what I was trying to do with my blog post, is help myself pay attention to the process better and be like, okay, what did I learn from this? What, you know, what can I take away? What didn't I know then that I know now? So yeah, that's really where it came from.
you brought up two super good points that I hope people catch. Is number one, you know, make sure you have some kind of a training journal. My training is always better when I'm carrying something around and writing things down. Spend a dollar and get like a cheap little notebook so you can write all this stuff down. And I love your idea of just doing at the end of every session, like once you're done with your conditioning or once you're done lifting, you know, do like a mini debrief, just like whether it's two or three sentences, two or three lines, just to figure out what, you know, what was effective, what, you know, what did you get smoked by, what was uncomfortable, what did you really enjoy, and all that stuff.
Yeah, this is the easiest, you know, the RPE scale, rate of perceived exertion, yep. Right? I still rate my lifts by that, you know, from 0 to 10. And just thinking, you know, how hard it was, right? I know some days I come in and I'm not feeling as great. Weights feel heavier. No big deal. Other days I feel awesome. Some days, you know, I surprise myself. But it's kind of like if you don't pay attention to your own kind of periodization, you might say, you know, your personal periodization, you know, you're the only one that can really hit on these insights about your own body, right? Because a great coach will get really close, but they still don't live inside you. So yeah, and that's what I try to tell my clients too. I try to inspire them long term, because you never need to get bored. Yeah. You know, there's so much stuff you could do.
Totally, totally.
So that's why I think training is exciting.
Yeah, don't forget, you know, you can have some fun in the gym sometimes. It doesn't need to, if it's boring, like really, seriously, take a step back and think about what you're doing and change some things up. Like I think, you know, it was so funny back, I mean, years ago, the thing that people always said is don't program hop. And, you know, now today people are saying, like Dan John's always saying, like, yeah, if you're going to find, like, do a different program, but make sure you follow it all the way through. Like, if you want to try a new program, do it for 5 weeks, see what happens. But try something different. If there's something cool that you see online, you want to give a shot and it looks safe and it looks, you know, effective and it's from someone that you trust, hell, there's no problem giving it a shot. It's always good to mix things up a little bit.
Yes, for sure. For sure. Fun is underrated.
No, God damn it. You're right. Like, seriously, everyone's got to chill out a little bit. If you're not having fun all the time, then you're doing something wrong with your life. So let's talk a little bit about, like, just women in the gym? Because this is a question that we get a lot. For a lot of women are starting to go and train. Maybe it's their first year in the, you know, in the gym, and they're trying to find like a good place to train. But these days, like, those gyms aren't all over the place, especially if you're in a remote location. You might just have access to like a Globo gym or something like that. So, what do you have in terms of, I guess, advice for women that are going into the gym, and it's like, usually it's either a really bad environment or it's an intimidating environment. What advice would you have for women out there and for men?
To women, I say women up. Mm. To man, I say man up. I totally understand that. I've experienced it. I did a Facebook post the other day where I surprised myself because I basically whined about having to work out in a commercial gym. And then later I was thinking, I was like, gosh, Joy, you know, this is going to happen. You know what I mean? Don't make it a big deal. You can't control your environment. And I totally understand and sympathize, because you go into these gyms, it's really intimidating. The weight room is surrounded by guys. You know, maybe some people are staring at you constantly. You know, you try to do the exercises that you don't know so well, et cetera, et cetera. I totally sympathize and understand what that feels like, but you still got to do it. So there's, you know, a couple options. First off, find a class that you enjoy, right? A lot of classes, even if they're not, you know, the perfect class with perfect form or whatever, you can learn basic movements. You can start putting yourself in that environment where you feel a little more comfortable. Hire a coach or trainer. Again, this is sometimes a hit and miss. Do your research, ask them good questions. Don't let them try to, you know, strong arm you or embarrass you. There's tons of great trainers out there. There's also crappy ones. But, you know, a trainer that will listen to you and design you a program or help teach you form with basic lifts is invaluable. I think it's one of the best investments someone can make. Find something, you know, if you're starting from the beginning with exercise, you start with something that you like to do and that will just get you building the habit, right? If that's, you know, buying home equipment, you can do a lot of stuff at home as well. But again, if you're at home on your own and you don't have someone to teach you, you're going to have to spend more time learning. But you know, at the end of the day, growth comes from conflict or struggle. And I said this today on the floor with one of my clients when she was like, oh my gosh, why is this so hard? And I was like, growth comes from struggle. So you have to have struggle in order to get growth. So really, if you want to, you know, take charge of your body and your strength and you want to do this for yourself, then don't let anybody stop you. And if you might feel embarrassed, you know, you might feel like you don't know what you're doing. That's okay. It's okay to feel that. Be okay with it. Just show up, do something and keep showing up, and you will build the confidence. If you want to learn and you want to get better, you know, kind of swallow that pit in your stomach, or you know, gulp it down and do it. Find a way. It's possible. You can work out at home. You can work out at a gym. You can find a class. You can find a trainer. You can find a partner. There's great YouTube channels for women. Marianne Kane is one. She puts out a lot of home workouts with kettlebells and stuff like that. Online training is a thing now. Photocracy has great classes. I just finished one. So there's lots and lots of options out there. And I know that the gym environment can sometimes be intimidating, but don't let it intimidate you. And that really is up to you. And it's tough, but you know, you do it. There's great online communities too, where you can share your experiences, you can get support, but at the end of the day, you're still going to have to show up and do it. So find a way to make it easy on yourself to start, at least, you know, start something, but then you're going to have to keep building from there. So, and you know, there's always going to be, you know, people that make you feel uncomfortable, or there's always going to be things you don't know, and that's okay.
It's right? Always going to be a creepy dude in the gym checking out
there's
the new girl.
Always going to be one. I mean, it's like, there's always going to be the old guy in a stringer.
Yeah.
You know, who every time you do bent over rows is just the happiest thing in the world.
I remember there was, I worked at a commercial gym once I left my internship at Cresty Performance, and the first thing that we, it was like a brand new gym that opened up, and I swear to God, like one of the first 10 people that walked into that place, you know, the day we opened was this dude that just got a notorious rap sheet for just hanging out in the gym for like 3 hours a night with a sleeveless shirt. Guy was not very, he was not very athletic looking, but he just kind of go out there and use his like weight gloves and sit on machines and just watch women while they train. It was the creep show, four nights a week at that club that I won't mention. So he's probably still there. So I cannot even imagine what some women have to go through when it comes to just dealing with all that garbage from guys at the gym.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I know how that feels. And you're always going to get the trainer that comes over and is like, you know, wants to give you free advice, or maybe it's not even a trainer, maybe it's just some random person. Girls do it too. But you know, it's like you can't control that. You know, if someone's telling you a bunch of stuff, but you don't, you know, you can just, you know, be polite and say, you know, I'm good. That's okay. Chill. You know, if you're really feeling harassed or someone actually harasses you, you know, by all means, report it. You know, but at the end of the day, this is gonna sound really dramatic, but think about when you're on your deathbed. You know what I mean? You're not gonna be worrying about the one guy in the gym that was staring at you while you were trying to learn how to deadlift,
sure,
right?
Sure.
So, you know, gives yourself some perspective, and then, you know, chill. You'll get better. You'll learn. You'll look less awkward. You'll feel less awkward, and then that's when it's gonna start feeling awesome. And then you're gonna be one of those girls who can go into any gym, and you go right to their weight room, and it doesn't matter that it's crammed with 25 guys and they're like looking at you like, oh my God, she's going to lift that. That's going to feel incredible. So it feels incredible for anyone, guy or girl. And that's what getting strong does. So you don't want to miss out on that just because it's a little bit scary.
Yeah. I mean, I cannot imagine if you're a woman trying to learn how to deadlift, how many guys would be going, I know how to deadlift. Can I show you? Let me show you. I saw it on bodybuilding.com this week or some form. I don't know. Anyways, now bodybuilding.com is a fantastic website. I buy my Quest bars through there. All right. So let's talk about a couple more things before we wrap up. One of them that I wanted to talk to you about is a series that you've been doing again at your blog. And that's just about, you know, the question that parents are always asking. It's because there's always new parents or parents. There's parents with kids that are always getting to that age of 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, where, you know, the kids are playing sports and they don't really know what to do when it comes to strength and conditioning or training for their kids. So, I mean, you have experience with this. Like, what do you got?
Well, without trying to, you know, reiterate my whole blog, kids can strength train, and the science supports it fully. There is no reason why a kid can't lift weights. But I just put out part two the other day, which goes in a little more detail about, you know, what is appropriate strength training? What is, you know, how would I take my kid from starting? You know, so kids need supervision just like any other sport, and lifting weights can be considered kind of like a sport, right? They need to be taught, they need help, but really kids are us adults who are doing correctives or trying to get back our squat form, kids have that ability. It's built in from when we're young, right? So they're in the prime time of life to enhance all these physical qualities, to get strong limbs, strong muscles. And this is like the optimal growing time. When you're a kid, especially from around, I think, gosh, I know there is an optimal age, but I'm going to say probably between 8 and 9 and 13, where, you know, it's almost imperative that they do something to get stronger, right? When they're young, you know, kids need to play, kids need to move around. This is where they build their movement base, where they get all those skills. They need to run, they need to jump, they need to crawl, they need to climb. But once kids start edging towards, you know, pre-puberty and stuff like that, get them involved in something that requires a little more skill, that actually requires a little more muscular effort, that requires, you know, strength, and have them build strength. It's very important. Now, when this comes down to how to practically do this, you know, not everyone has access to great coaches. Not everyone has, knows, you know, can take their kid and teach them how to lift because they don't know how to lift. But those are kind of some of the things I addressed in my blog post. So if anybody is interested, go read that, because I offered some practical tips about picking classes and coaches, about, you know, talking with strength coaches if your child plays a sport, and helping them develop, right, and not get injured, and you know, get a lot of benefits from it. But by all means, yes, kids can lift weights. And, you know, I'm not going to say should, because should is kind of like, it depends, but I would almost say kids should lift weights. Yes. or participate in strength exercise, right?
Totally. Yeah, the kids are amazingly versatile when it comes to strength and conditioning. You know, again, something that you hit on is just, you know, making sure that you find the right place for them to train. Don't just have them train at some weird, you know, garage.
Yeah, you know,
a good place to train.
Exactly, right? You know, they still need supervision when it does involve external load, barbells, dumbbells, kettlebells, mm-hmm. Technique and instruction is very important. It's very important, just like anything else, right?
Exactly. It's like with any human being, you don't want them to have a bad coach. And unfortunately, there's kind of a lot of them out there. So just make sure you take a look at them before you just leave the kids there for good.
One of the biggest points I made about that was, you know, the strongest influence that a child has is one of the strongest influences, their home life. Mm. Right. And that's really where a parent, not even a coach, right, just a parent who's thinking about their kid and how to keep them healthy or fit or prepare them for their sport or whatever. You know, you control the home environment, right? You can make exercise and physical activity normal. You can make it just regular, right? It's not a lot of, you know, kids are not in an environment that supports healthy choices, right? So maybe, for instance, maybe you're a parent who is overweight or you don't exercise regularly or something like that, right? So forget all that for a second, but just think about the kind of environment you're creating for your child and what they think of as normal, right? So if they think of, you know, sitting TV and playing video games all day long as normal, well, then yeah, exercise is going to be like this big, weird, stressful thing per se, or could be, you know what I mean? So one of the biggest motivations for a parent, you know, thinking about their health and fitness is thinking about, okay, well, what is my kid going to grow up thinking of as normal, right? Is physical exertion and physical activity and exercise, do they think of that as a normal part of their life? Because that's really what's going to stick with them as an adult, right? It's going to think back and be like, oh yeah, well, I kind of always exercised, right? And that's stronger. That is where a parent has the biggest influence, right? With diet, with nutrition, with exercise, with anything. So
as cliched as it sounds, it does start at the home, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What is it? The hand that rocks the cradle rules the world.
Sure. I'll take that one too.
That's scary though. It's a scary thought for all parents.
Yeah. You know, like I said, I'm not there yet, but I can only imagine, you know, parenting sounds like a fun adventure on its own. I'll stick with my dog for now. I get a dog.
Man, it's terrifying.
I figure my dog's still alive after 5 years and, he's kicking some butt. So,
another 5 years and you'll be ready for a kid.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. We'll see. I'll start kicking the tires soon, but, we'll see. But, before we wrap up, you know, again, I want to give people, a couple places where they can, check out the stuff that you have going on. First off, fitnessbaddies.com is where you're getting in your blogs and stuff like that. And you got a ton of stuff up there now. So I really recommend, you know, men and women, go check that out. Go check out what Joy is doing over there. And of course, on Twitter, I mean, that's how a lot of people communicate these days and post stuff whenever new things come out. And you're just at Joy Victoria. FitB, that's FITB on Twitter. And I'll post all that stuff in the show notes. But
cool.
Before we start wrapping up again, I just want to mention to everyone out in the audience who is supporting the show through Patreon, thank you so much. And if you haven't already, checked out patreon.com/thefitcast. You can support the show starting at just $1. So if you want to make sure that these shows get produced every single week, that is the way to do it. So I hope you enjoy the content that is being produced. You get to hear from great people like Joy every single week. And it gets, you know, sent directly to your iTunes feed for free. And if you're a Patreon supporter, you also get the episodes 7 days early without any kind of pre-roll stuff. So thank you to everyone out there that is supporting the show and making sure that I can still do it after 315 episodes.
That's pretty impressive, I must say.
It just happened, you know.
That's pretty impressive. I know. I look back at my blog posts and I'm like, wow.
Yeah, I just recommend that you don't go listen to anything before episode like 150. It's pretty bad. I'm just kidding. So, So Joy, I mean, thank you so much for taking the time to come on. I don't know, do you have anything else that's coming up that people should keep an eye out for? Any kind of like articles or blogs or anything like that?
Wow, I have a lot in the works, but you know, really, it's just I just keep going. So
totally,
yeah. Yeah, I'm going to a Speed and Power conference this weekend, actually, with Canadian Athletics Association. So that's pretty exciting.
Nice. Where's that?
Yeah, that's actually right here in Mississauga.
Where
in
is
Toronto.
That?
In Toronto. Okay. Sorry, I'm sorry. Yes, I forget. So it's outside of Toronto. So it's local. They're coming to us, which is nice.
I didn't realize you were so close. Like, I'm in Massachusetts. I didn't realize you're from the New England area. But I'm guessing you at least enjoy the cold because you went up to Canada. You went even farther north. And we had snow today in Massachusetts. That's how crazy this is.
We had snow yesterday. Actually, I'm originally from California.
Oh, okay.
So, well, you know, what I think about the weather is I can't change it. So sure. If I decide to live here, I'll live with it. But, you know, there's sledding and there's snowmen.
Multiple layers. You know, all that stuff.
Kids love snow. They almost love snow more than summer.
My dog loves snow more than he loves anything in the world. I think maybe he likes dogs more than snow, but yeah, this is kind of going into circles. But again, thank you so much to everyone out there that is downloading the show. You can check it out on iTunes, subscribe on there, submit a review if you enjoy it. Check out all of Joy's stuff, and of course, you can get the show notes at thefitcast.com. Joy, it's great to meet you and to talk to you, and we'll definitely have to do something else down the road.
Yes, for sure. Thank you so much, Kevin.